Hothouse.com Live, episode 94. Global MMA Consultant. No pain, just glory. Central Oregon Strike. Combat Sports Insurance. Vision Smoke Shop. 24LV. Draco Sports. Triumph Fitness. Big T's Nightclub. Rackbound World. For all the Glenn Custom Mouth Guards. Razorware. Intimidation Clothing. And Hank Grime.
What's up, Carl?
I hit the girl with my car.
Oh, good. Get rid of that damn thing. Oh, let's get the show started.
A Lincoln Town Car. Nothing left of that.
Well, I'm a poor man. There you go. No pain. I struggled half of my life for going against the grain, but I think it's so
My brothers, what are we doing? I heard the crow got ran over. That's really unfortunate. That poor little bastard.
Hey, shout out to our boy Jason London. He's in, with his wife in an emergency room somewhere, or not an emergency room, I guess, but a hospital, and he's expecting a baby tonight sometime, so hope everything goes well for him.
That shows you Canadian medical system. You go to the emergency room up there for delivery.
I don't have.
It's probably fucking cheaper.
It probably is, man. Oh shit, how my boys doing tonight? Everybody ready to rock, man? I think we got a pretty kick-ass show lined up tonight. I mean, we're going to have Ian the Barn Owl Loveland. We're going to have a well-known referee, Dave Hagan. Then we've got Ricky. I'm super excited. That's right, buddy. I'm super excited to have him on. And then we're going to finish this night with one of the badass guys in all of MMA, dude. He's been on our show. He's one of our favorites. He's one of your favorites. We're going to have the protege, DJ Linderman, kicking it with us tonight to tell us what's going on. And there's a lot going on with him. Oh, I think we're going to kick off tonight's show. We're going to get Ian up here in a minute, and we're going to rock it out with him. But I'll tell you what, everybody, we have a quick second. Tomorrow night, we will be doing a special show. You do not want to miss it. We'll be posting information after tonight's show. But let's kick it off right now with Ian. Ian, you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing tonight, Ian?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Man, we're doing wonderful. For everybody out there, Ian Loveland, if you don't know him, definitely look him up. But for those who might not know you, whether it's overseas or in the South or something, for some weird reason, you want to give everybody a quick rundown of who you are?
Bantamweight fighter fighting out of Sports Lab in Portland, and current Tachi Palace Bantamweight champ.
And
he has a wicked awesome tattoo of a steelhead on his back.
That's right.
Hey, Ian, this is a little pocket, man. I just got a quick question about that. With the nickname of the Barn Owl, but then you have this kick-ass tattoo on your back of a steelhead. What's the thought process there?
Well, I wasn't thinking about one or the other, I guess. Keep my fishing and my fighting life separate.
Yeah, you don't want to be that keyed up out there on the river when you're trying to bring in the steelies, huh?
Yeah, fishing definitely, man. I got to balance out with my fighting. I get too overboard with the fishing, and then I'm not show up to training. I keep those parts of my life separate.
Hey, who did that work on your back?
Lou Hess at Atlas Tattoo in Portland.
Okay. Beautiful work, man. Beautiful work. Super excited that, you picked up a title. Obviously you went down there and you won in just devastating fashion. How did you feel about that win?
I felt good. It's always good to get out of there without having to work too hard. That's a positive. And he was he's a pretty tough guy. I was expecting a much tougher fight, but sometimes it just doesn't go your way, and sometimes it goes your way in spades.
Well, I know that
you know, you're training on the sports lab. You guys got a lot of great fighters that are fighting all over in big organizations, as well as organizations up and down the West Coast. What's your plan of action? I know that, you know, once you were cut from the UFC, you've come back and been it's just ridiculously dominant. Is that your goal to get back there, or are you looking to maybe step to another league and follow maybe some of your teammates? Or
well, you know, I want to go back into the UFC for sure, but I need to make money, so got to do what I can do right now. But definitely, I mean, the UFC seems to be the place where you know, if you work hard enough and you knock enough dudes out, you can make, you know, pretty decent living. I'm trying to make enough money to where I can just kick back and relax after this fighting thing's over.
Well, and for fans out there who might not know, I mean, excluding I believe they were both decision losses in the UFC. You haven't had an actual, like, loss outside of that in 5-6 years. I mean, you have an impressive fight record. You know, Joseph Benavidez, I believe, was a decision loss. And, I mean, look at what he's done. My big question is, what about, you know, the Yee fight? I know a lot of people felt like it should have gone your way. Is that a fight you're looking to get back to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't been to a whole lot of decisions. And, you know, in my career, I've been to 3 decisions. And, you know, one with Benavidez, and I can definitely see he won the second and third rounds of that fight. And, you know, it sucks, but I can see that. I'm not quite convinced that, you know, he's beat me. So I'd like to have that one back. That one kind of eats at me quite a bit.
Yeah, this is a little hockey, man. I'm kind of curious, like, what happened when you left the UFC? Because you really, like, flipped the switch, man, and you've been decimating people. I mean, you had the knee KO against Crispin, and then that right hand that you caught Casey Olsen with, that was maybe one of the most vicious punches I've seen in a while. And it looked like you might have hurt your hand on that. Was it when you hit him or when he fell on your hand that maybe that might have happened?
You know, I hurt my hand a little bit in training before that, so every time I moved it, you know, it was hurting. So definitely neither of those punches felt too good. But, you know, my hand's still a little tender. I've been taking it easy on the training. I'm not sparring right now, letting that heal up a little bit. But I mean, the main difference between, you know, my last fight in the UFC and, you know, where I'm at right now, what I've done since has been moving to sports lab and getting on a real serious regimen. My strength and conditioning and my diet and everything has just been so much more dialed in. And my skill building, I've training, you know, 3 times a day a lot, and just have consolidated a lot more work into a short amount of time, and I've just been getting better so much faster.
How like, when I've seen videos of you sparring and training, and I've watched most of your fights, you have a really unique striking style. Where did you come up with that, or, you know, how did you develop that unique style, I guess maybe the best way to ask you that?
I don't know. It might have to do, you know, more with my body type and things like that. But I think my style is tightening up a bit now where, you know, I've got a reputation for being, you know, real kind of loose and wild. But, you know, bit by bit, I'm pulling it together, getting a little tighter. And I'm definitely, you know, I've been working with Andy Minsker on my boxing, and my punching power has just increased an incredible amount. So, I mean, my style is still evolving. And, I think right now I'm at a point where it's just kind of snowballing down the hill and things are just falling into place. And I think, you know, I'm getting better faster than I ever have in my career. My striking is going to be my main tool here forward.
Yeah, I mean, both of those fights were great. I still can see, like, images of the Olsen finish. Just like, he was out, like, it looked like before you hit him. But, I mean, regardless, it was a great finish and really looks great on your record. There's something else I actually want to ask you about from Tachi Palace 14. As you were a fighter in the back and you're watching Rosales work some of those early fights where it looked like he really didn't have any ideas as to how to rep, what was the mood in the back, or were you even aware any of that stuff was going on?
You know, to be honest, I didn't watch really any of the other fights. It's kind of my own thing. I had a bunch of my boys came down to watch me fight, and it was just kind of us and then the rest of the Tachi Palace people, so I wasn't paying any attention. I'm sorry.
No, that's definitely understandable. I mean, I can understand you're probably more concerned about your fight than the 7 or 8 ones that went down before you. It was just something that I had to ask since you were down there in that environment. What do you think some of the advantages that Sports Lab has given you that maybe Team Quest wasn't?
Well, I mean, the main thing that I'm getting now, and it's, you know, Team Quest is a great gym and is a great gym. And, you know, Matt Lindblom, you know, one of the top coaches out there. I mean, the main thing is the strength and conditioning with Phil Claude. I think an error that I made a lot in the past was kind of grinding and thinking that my conditioning was good and not, you know, necessarily tapering at the right time, not putting the right work in at the right time. And I just wasn't in as good a shape as I thought I was. And, you know, it ended up showing in my performances. And, you know, now, you know, I got no doubt that I'm in shape. If there's nothing in the back of my head, I know that I can go 15 minutes, 25 minutes, no problem with anybody in the world. And I think that's been, you know, a huge advantage for me.
Yeah, I think that is something that a lot of young fighters, hopefully they're listening to what you're saying there, because, I mean, there are a few things you can control in the cage, and one of those things that you can control is your cardio training. And I think that's awesome that you were able to maybe fix that, and it's really has taken your game to the next level.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Skip. Knowing that you're such a dominant fighter and that you do have such an impressive record, are you getting calls to be tested maybe overseas or some leagues, you know, in other places besides the United States?
You know, not really. I think the last fight I had overseas was – Well, I fought in Brazil, and then I fought in Bahrain once, but, you know, I haven't really had any interest from any, like, Asian shows or anything like that. You know, I think my management team is on the same page with me. You know, I want to get back in the UFC, and so, I think my manager is kind of in their ear at all times, and that's kind of where I'm putting all my chips.
No, understandable. You know, with just, you know, leagues like MFC and – you know, ESC and RFA over in the Middle East and African Extreme Fighting Championships. These guys are starting to produce some great cards, you know, outside of Asia and outside the United States and up, you know, so I'm just always curious. I like to see who's, you know, touching base with, you know, what fighters here in America. You know, we see it happen all the time. I'd like to see you possibly go up to MFC. I feel like that's a great stage for you to, you know, be dominant and show the world once again why you should be back at the Zuffa stage.
Yeah, maybe they should give you a call. I haven't heard from anybody, so, you know.
Dude, it's funny you say that, man. You know, they listen. A lot of these guys listen to our show. So, you know, for everybody out there, man, you guys can find them on Facebook. You guys can call Sport Lab. You guys, it's Sport Lab's Mixed Martial Arts on Facebook. But you guys can look them up, find them, offer them a fight. He's legit, and I guarantee you offer him a title fight, he's coming home with your strap. That just seems to be your nature. So let me ask you, you were talking a little bit earlier about fishing and training. So how addicted to this fishing are you? I mean, is it something you seriously spend maybe too much time doing?
Yeah, it's been a problem for me in the past. I mean, to be honest, since I've been training at Sports Lab, and you know, I was coming off of, you know, pretty big letdown, you know, getting into the UFC after all those years of training and then getting cut, you know, I haven't fished a whole lot. I mean, I've fished a lot for an average person, but I mean, I seriously cut way back. And for my last couple fights, I mean, I wasn't fishing at all. I put it all into my training and, you know, it helped a lot. But, you know, years ago and maybe not even so long ago, yeah, fishing every day, every morning, wasn't getting the 3 training sessions in the day that I have now, you know, showing up and doing my sparring in the evening or afternoon after I was done with the day fishing and being tired. It probably affected me a little bit, but, you know, now I know that if I want to fish in some cooler places and in Mexico or whatever down the road, I got to put in my work now and make that money, so.
Yeah, get out of that peacock bass down there in Mexico, man. That's something I got on my bucket list myself.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, being, you know, that you come from Sports Lab, what was the mood when Tyson got back after his win. Were you guys all super pumped? Did that push the group as a whole?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it kind of energized the room for sure. This is one of those things that, you know, I think it surprised a lot of people, but I don't think it surprised anybody at Sports Lab. I mean, we were ready for that, and I think everybody at the gym knew that, you know, he's going to go knock that guy out, and then it was going to be huge, and pretty much went down like everyone thought it would. But definitely everybody's excited for him, and his career is just going to take off now.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Lahaki. Ian, man, what's a regular training session up there at Sports Lab like? Because you guys have some killers in that room right now. I mean, you got two guys that are going to war this weekend, and what, Tim Welch is out in Atlantic City, and then Dana Wood up in Tacoma.
Yeah. What was the question? I kind of missed that.
What's a training session like in up there at Sports Lab right now with so many guys that are at that high of a level?
Well, really, what's kind of unique about training at Sports Lab, as far as anything that I've experienced, is it's different. That people have their own set times to come in and spar. It's not like it's just a room full of guys, you know, kind of going at it. Everybody's, you know, hitting pads one at a time. There's a few classes where everyone just kind of comes in and works on kickboxing or grappling or wrestling. But for the most part, like the sparring and things like that are all pretty individualized. So you'll have like a time to come in, and then after that, the next group of two guys will come in and spar. So you get a lot more individual attention. And I think the reason a lot of these guys are so tough right now is because, you know, they got a lot more eyes on them and a lot more people helping them out.
Well,
go ahead, Bob.
I was going to say, you know, with that, you having given up maybe some of your, you know, your fishing, you know, to come in and be more personalized, did that make it easier being able to get in there one-on-one and not have to worry about maybe two or three other guys counting on you to get there?
Oh, yeah, the one-on-one, I mean, the one-on-one skill building, it has been huge because, you know, I've been used to a lot of, you know, just in a group kind of having partners and you know, you reconvene, listen to the coach, detail something out and have a coach walk around. Whereas, you know, now I'm kind of getting there's no training partner. It's just me and the coach. Or, you know, if there is, it's me, my training partner, and the coach. You know, it's much more geared towards you know, individual. So, I mean,
so
it makes a lot
easier.
Who
are the coaches you're working with for, like, maybe, you know, give everyone a shout-out, tell them who your different coaches are. So,
yeah, Andy Minsker's been working my boxing. I've been Phil Claude's been working strength and conditioning. Obviously, I've been working with Trevor Bunnell on my jiu-jitsu. And Robert Falls kind of teaches the MMA, putting everything together. And, you know, other guys float in, you know, in and out. And, you know, we're working on putting more coaching in. And I know, you know, things are going to keep getting bigger and better.
Well, obviously, you know, your progression is going great. You know, the whole team as a whole, your whole gym is producing consistently. And, you know, getting into that kind of family, you know, tight-knit bond, you know, is it helped you relax a little bit more and focus on your fight career, having these guys to be able to lean on a little bit more because you've gotten to that one-on-one personal time?
Well, yeah. One thing, too, I mean, it makes you every time, you know, when you're working with that same coach on that same scale over and over again, you kind of know what to expect, and it's a lot easier to build on something. It's not so haphazard. You know, you pick up where you left off 2 days ago or yesterday or last week. So it's just easier to find a groove and to just keep moving. And, you know, it's kind of hard to put together a bunch of random skills. You know, just, you know, what are we going to work on today? And, you know, I kind of trained like that for a while. And it makes it easier when everyone's kind of following the same path and things work a lot smoothly. A lot more smoothly and a lot faster.
That totally makes sense. You know, I'm glad to see that, you know, leaving the UFC didn't, you know, hurt you and hinder you. You know, we see some fighters, they don't take, you know, some of the humps in the road so well. You seem to have gotten better from that, and I hope to see you back soon. I think you're going to continue to dominate. You know, you definitely are probably the best outside the Zuffa banner. You know, I don't know if there's many guys who can hang with you, truthfully. So it's going to be exciting to see what your next fights line up. You know, I got to ask you, though, following you on Twitter and stuff and some of the guys in Sport Labs, how badass was that birthday? Is that a birthday cake, I'm assuming?
Oh, the Barn Owl? Yeah, it was badass. It was about as realistic a cake as I've ever seen in my life. I had no idea when he said, you know, my wife Karen's going to make you a Barn Owl cake. I figured, you know, like a square cake that she would cut out, you know, in a Barn Owl shape or something, like stamping a cookie. It literally looked like a Barn Owl perched on a branch. It was pretty trippy.
Dude, that was the coolest cake. I tell you what, man, big props to her. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if she airbrushed it or how she got those details to make the feathers look so lifelike. She did amazing. That's one of the coolest cakes I've ever seen, bro.
Yeah, it was all airbrushed, and it was amazing.
Well, you know, we get to talk a little bit about your past and a little bit about the future. You know, give some, you know, what's some advice you could give some of the amateurs listening tonight? The single most important thing about training, in your opinion?
Well, there's so many important things about training. The most important thing about, you know, preparing yourself for a fight is be in shape. Don't ever get tired in the ring. That's the most important thing. That's the worst place to be in the cage, in the ring, or whatever, is to be tired. Put in your road work, get your training on, and, you know, always be in shape.
Well, you know, that's the, you know, Pocky says it all the time. What's that? That's the one determining factor in a fight that you can truly control 100%, and that's your cardio.
Yeah.
Well,
you're either going to put the time in to train and take it seriously, and you can see the guys that do that. I mean, it's pretty blatantly obvious.
It's true. Before we run out of time with you tonight, I want to give you a chance to give a shout-out to any sponsors, coaches, family, any way social media-wise friends and fans can find you.
Yeah, for sure. I want to give a shout-out to Sports Lab and you know, all my teammates, training partners, and coaches, Jason House, my manager with Iridium, and Venom, and Venom Eyewear, and Gamma O, and thank you guys, and that's about it.
Well, hey, you know, we look forward to seeing you. I hope you at least get to go down and defend your title once before you go to even a bigger stage than Dachi. Congratulations once again on that. You know, I think you're with a good group. I totally, totally love what you guys are doing up there, you know, and look forward to seeing what you do next, brother, and, you know, definitely look at the NFC, man. See about going up there and taking some belts. That'd be nice.
Cool. I'll check into it. I appreciate it, guys.
Have a good night, brother.
Take it easy.
Thanks.
Lepofsky. Yeah, the kid's legit, man. I mean, I don't understand why right now he doesn't have offers for 25 leagues wanting him to come in and test their champs or their top two or three contenders, because he's a true barometer of how good you are, you know, at that weight class. I mean, come on, man. A decision loss to Benavidez, you're good.
Oh, no, I mean, I think probably a lot of the reason that he's not getting phone calls is because, like, if you look at the lower weight classes, Tachi Palace is kind of like the main feeder for the UFC on anything like maybe bantamweight, featherweight, or below now that WEC is gone. Tachi Palace has that deal with Legends of Fighting in Indianapolis,
yep,
where they run the tournament out there, and then they bring guys into Tachi, you know, and they kind of work their way up the ladder that way. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense that he might not be having a lot of reaction from other organizations at the time, but that's just because it's probably, you know, inevitable that within either before his next fight or in the minutes after, if he were to win, you know, that he's going to get a call from Zuffa and have to make that step. So I mean, it really kind of makes sense to me in some aspects.
Well, and you know, speaking of Ian and Sports Lab, their fighter Tyson Nam, it looks like he was cleared to go fight for World Series of Fighting after Bellator declines the match's offer. So, you know, once again, Sport Lab's making moves out there, man. They're doing big things for their fighters. They're, you know, you interviewed Tim Welch, what, just a couple weeks ago.
Back in early September.
Yeah, he's going to be, this Friday at Bellator, correct?
Friday, Bellator, Atlantic City, Mikhail Sarov, Tim the Cheap Shot Welch, or maybe there's no the on it, I can't remember. Dude, I'm really looking forward to that scrap. I mean, I'm glad Bellator's back. You know, we need some good Friday night fights. Bellator seems to not really cancel too many events in comparison to some of the other organizations right now that operate on Friday nights, but it'll be good for them. They've also got Damon the Demon Wood, who's fighting up at Cage Sport this weekend against Villalba. What the hell is that guy's first name? Sam Villalba? Oh, man. This had to happen. I just wrote a damn article on this guy, too.
You know, hey, speaking of great MMA action on Friday nights, we have a gentleman in line to come on the show right now who's Friday night, Saturday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night. He's probably refereed every night of the week, I would be willing to bet. Dave Hagan, how are you doing, sir?
Excellent. How are you doing?
Man, we're doing wonderful. Thank you for taking the time out. I know you got a busy schedule with your gym and you know, working those kids out all the time. So, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to come out tonight and kind of give the fans an insight to what a referee is in their life and some of your thoughts and opinions on stuff.
Okay, well, I'd be happy to answer anything.
Well, first of all, I'd like everyone to know this is the same Dave Hagan you've seen in the UFC. I believe you're licensed in 7 or 8 states, correct?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, I know it's quite a few states, and not only are you a referee and somebody who has trained in mixed martial arts, but you also had a career at one point, correct?
I did. And it was primarily in kickboxing, tried MMA, and continue to have fun with it, but I've not made it a career.
No, you've done a wonderful job making refereeing a career. You've gotten to referee some great matches from the amateur level all the way up to the big shows. As a fan myself, what do you prefer? Do you see more action in the amateur leagues than the pro leagues, or do you have a preference either way when you go to ref?
You know, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of like watching either if you watch two white belts that are competing in jiu-jitsu that are equally matched, it's just as exciting as if you watch two black belts who are equally matched. And I think really the action and the satisfaction of a refereeing comes in the matchmaking. So when you have two equally matched people that are really putting their heart out, whether they be at the very high level or at the very at an amateur level, it just makes it that much of more of an exciting show.
Okay, you know, I've seen, and I'm a little pocky run with this, but I'll kind of feed in. You know, we've seen in a lot of major sports lately, you know, a lot of issues with refereeing. And he could probably delve a little bit more into that because he was really entailed into an event recently. And we'd like your opinion as somebody who's a really, honestly, a well-respected referee. Lepaki, why don't you run at that?
Dave, were you able to watch Tachi Palace 14? Or did you hear about what
one more
happened
time
with Marcos? Were you able to watch Tachi Palace 14?
No, I wasn't, but I've heard about it.
Well, I mean, I guess if you haven't seen it, it would be kind of hard to get your opinion on it. But, I mean, basically there was 4 fights where Marcos Rosales really, like, looked like he had zero experience in the ring. And, like, typically, you know, I mean, I understand that on some nights that a referee has a bad fight and those things happen. But when you get a series, like, where there's 4 consecutive fights like that, what is the typical protocol in the back for having something like that go on where, like, I mean, in oh, man, I can't think. The one fight, the guy was in a chokehold, tapped out. Halfway through tapping out, his hand stops moving, and the referee leaves him in a chokehold for another 9 seconds. when he's standing like right over top of the guy. Is there any kind of protocol for if you notice that a guy's having a really bad night and he's, you know, four fights in a row that have gone kind of really shadily?
Well, you know, it's really kind of an individual thing. I've had bad nights, and I recognize when I have those bad nights, and a lot of times what I'll do is I'll rely on my other refs and say, can you take this next one, because I just need a couple minutes. And that's happened to me. I've done it. But, you know, I actually don't know about the fight you're talking about because I watched it on YouTube at one point because it's something that somebody had said. As a referee, one of the things you have to realize in the MMA world is if there's concussive head injury, it's the referee's job to step in and have the exact timing. When it comes down to arm bars or submission holds, when the person taps out, if you're not right on it, then the person gets injured. But when it comes to choke holds, there's almost no residual damage to hold the extra second if you can't see their eyes, and to hold it even extra 5 seconds to be sure that they're out, as opposed to stop the fight and then change the nature of the fight.
Great answer. I like that. You know, with that, is there any, like, you know, if you run into problems where as you are working in a van, you notice that a referee is just not on their game, do you guys go back as a group later on and sit down and you guys discuss things like this? Is there any kind of forum for you guys privately like that?
Always. When we're in Nevada, when we do the UFCs, we always have an after-fight meeting. And we talk about things that are either controversial or that we can all learn from. And we oftentimes, like Keith Kaiser, will defer to either Josh Rosenthal or Herb Dean and say, hey, tell me what you saw here so that everybody else saw the same thing. And if there's a discrepancy in judging, oftentimes he'll ask, tell me what you saw, so that three people can come to grips with what the other person saw. And all that does is improve the overall officiating. That's what happens at the big shows. In the smaller shows, we always check in with each other, especially when we trust each other as officials, and say, hey, this was controversial. What did you see? What could I have done better? And that's the way we improve ourselves.
Well, that's
cool.
I've
seen you work events, Mr. Hagan, and you go, like, before the fighters are even in the cage, you're in there checking that cage out from top to bottom. Like, you don't leave any stones unturned. I mean, how much time do you have to put into a show? Do you guys have to research the fighters just like, you know, if you were going to be in a fight, so you maybe have an idea of what you're looking for or what they might try and do in there?
If it is a, you know, there's two schools of thought. I've talked to Big John about it, and he oftentimes doesn't have to research the fighters because he knows who they are, but has gone so far as to research the fighters to generally know what to expect. Other referees will not do that at all, and they do that because they sometimes think that it can skew how you may see the fight going. And both of them are schools of thought, and neither is correct and neither is incorrect. It's just really a method that a referee is going to use to be more comfortable in doing their job. Personally, I tend not to because I don't want to skew how I'm going to referee that fight, and I walk into the fight as somebody who doesn't know what's going to happen, and then I get into the flow of what they're going to do with their game plans within a few seconds.
Yeah, I like that because that's what we tell fighters so often, that, you know, you don't really want to watch, you don't want to set up your game plan based on what the other guy does. And hearing that from a referee, I really like that because it really, like, I can see what you're saying about how you might be skewed to think, oh, he's going to go right into here next. And then when something completely different happens, then you're thrown completely off your game. I think that's awesome.
Well, one of the things that happens is, and I've seen this time and time again, even so far as the big shows, when you get too close to a fighter, the action seems more dramatic. So if you're not maintaining distance and objectivity, when you get really close, you can think that those punches are much harder than they really are. Whereas if you're further out, you can say, hey, I'm taking a look at this. The fighter's fighting back. I'm seeing all this movement. He's probably okay. And it really comes down to viewing it objectively versus, hey, I'm going to get in close because I'm really concerned this guy's going to kill the other guy.
Is that maybe what happened this weekend in the Charlie Brenneman Kyle Noak fight, where Mazzagatti was maybe too close to the action, and when Brenneman fell back into him, he kind of felt he needed to stop the fight at that point?
you know, I haven't seen that fight, and for the most part, I wouldn't necessarily criticize another ref on the air for the simple fact that what we generally do is we correct our mistakes in private, and it's considered somewhat bad form to correct somebody on the air, and I haven't seen the fight.
No, I understand that.
Now, how much of your previous experience in training, you know, because you've trained with some of the greatest mixed martial arts out there and some great kickboxers and Thai fighters, how much of that experience helps you in your refereeing?
Tremendously. And I've had a lot of people tell me that, hey, as long as you understand the game, you can referee. And I absolutely disagree. I think that that's somewhat the case in boxing and is not the case in MMA. In MMA, it's my true belief that if you understand jiu-jitsu, you know when a person's in trouble and the nuances of when to move in and when to say, regardless of how bad it looks, I know he's not going to lock it in, so I'm not going to start to move in. You can recognize the use of the shoulders while they're on top in a mount and say, hey, you know, these things sound loud, but they're not making any connective damage because he's not using the shoulders, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really just taking a look at some of the previous experience I've had as a fighter and saying, and applying that and saying, okay, this guy is okay or this guy isn't okay. Also, looking at how the bodies move, and it's really, really kind of interesting. When a person gets knocked out, the way they fall is more indicative of anything else. So if I see the legs just absolutely go noodle and they fall down, pretty much the fight's over, as opposed to stiffen up, where they may wake up as soon as they hit the ground and continue fighting. So my previous experience allows me to be able to see a lot of different situations, not only as a coach, but a ref and a fighter. I've been in there over 4,300 times. So it really helps me based on the experience.
That's, I can't, there's nothing I can say other than that sounds like the most common sense answer. I mean, you know, you see it all the time, and I'm glad that you brought, you know, you pointed out that it does make such an issue with your ability to be able to ref, knowing these positions. And you train in this quite a bit. I mean, you know, outside of you reffing and your other daily job, you train kids all the time. You work with fighters all the time. And I believe you have, what, Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, and MMA all in your school?
Correct, yes.
For everybody out there, you want to tell them the name of your school and where it's located?
Sure. I call it Dajo Gen, which stands for David, D-A, Joseph, J-O, and Hagen, G-E-N. Dajo Gen, it's in Salem, Oregon, off Broadway and Market, 1127 Broadway. And we operate on Tuesday, Thursday, and then we have a team practice, which I don't coach, on Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. And so that I teach the classes, and then other people do the coaching so that I can still referee and do what I want to, and that's help fighters but still referee.
That's cool. You're a very big supporter of local MMA. I mean, obviously, you know, working with kids, working events. You know, I'm glad to see you at events here in Oregon and around the Pacific Northwest working. When you have the newer refs coming up and you go to an event in, you know, maybe Bend, Oregon or up in, you know, Arlington, Washington, and, you know, wherever, and you're working this event, do you have, like, a training program for these new refs? Do they come and just shadow you? Or I've always wondered, how does somebody become a referee?
I can't have a somewhat unconventional route, but the current conventional route is potentially have some experience in training, some interest in it. And we typically don't look at somebody as a fan and say, you can be a referee, but somebody who is trained, somebody who's in shape, because it takes a lot of physical ability to be in there, as well as the confidence to stand in front of fighters and say, I'm going to control this fight. So those are kind of the prerequisites, if you will, when I look at a referee. And then we have a training program here in Oregon that I put on with the Oregon State Athletic Commission. With their permission, they allow me to train referees and train judges. And they get certified here in Oregon. And then the training program allows for them to shadow. So nobody hops in there as soon as they're done training. They have to shadow another referee. They have to shadow other judges, show proficiency, and then start to take on more and more duties. So, and then that shadowing entails evaluations. It entails multiple fights in between each one that they referee so they can see things. I have them write down on a piece of paper all of the aspects that we go over, like the angles of where the judges are, the angles, the best angle of what you're looking at for the fighter, where you want to stand, the distance you want to stand, what you're looking for, all of those things that we try to teach them, as well as consistent movement and the mechanics of the ring. I make them document what they're seeing, and they repeat back to me what they're seeing and where it is potentially somebody screwed up and or could improve based on their opinion, and it really helps them to realize what's happening in that ring. So that's part of the training program too.
Now, do you guys work any of the smokers here in Oregon?
Really depends. If the smoker is in any way a non-sanctioned event and has any propensity to get in trouble with a sanctioning body, we won't work them because it can cost us our license. If it's truly a smoker, where they're using big head gear, shin pads, kickboxing smokers, we can work those. The smoking boxing, all of the amateur boxing anywhere in the United States, period, hands down, every single state, is regulated through USA Boxing. So even if it's a smoker, USA Boxing must be involved.
Okay. Well, you know, the reason I was asking is we've seen such a huge influx of smoker events in the Pacific Northwest in the last year or so. So I didn't know if you guys were, as a whole, refereeing all those as well, or if those are like in Washington where they put on an unsanctioned event and you guys aren't tied to that.
It really depends. Like I was going to do the smoker down in Eugene just recently because it met the qualifications and it met the standards of truly being a smoker, and I was comfortable with that. However, there are other ones that I've been asked to do, and they cross certain lines that I just can't touch.
Now, when you see that, maybe, you know, somebody offers you an event and you look at it and you're like, I can't do this, you know, what's your opinion? Do you feel like, as a referee, do you feel like maybe these non-sanctioned smokers shouldn't be allowed? Or do you feel as a fan, hey, it's safe, it's acceptable, there's just a few guidelines that are a little different than maybe the state's guidelines, so I think it's okay?
Usually what I do is I realize that they're going to hold the smoker anyway. And now as a coach, as a fighter, and as a referee and an official, I feel like I have an obligation. Even though I'm not going to be at that event, I give them some personal advisement, if you will, if they're willing to accept it, on how to make it safe, how to make it legal, and how to not cross the sanctioning boundary lines. If they're truly going to do it, these are the things that they must do. And for the most part, I've had every single smoker listen and say, I didn't realize I was going to cross this boundary. Thanks for the advice. And then they changed some of the things they were doing to make it legal.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Mr. Hagan, you touched on some things earlier when you were talking about the qualifications for a referee. The thing that I've always been intrigued the most by what referees do is the willingness to step between two guys that, you know, most men wouldn't want to be within 20 feet of when they're in that kind of an environment. How difficult was that maybe to overcome in the early stages of your referee career, or is it something that just comes naturally since you were able to compete? And is that maybe why the requirement of being a former competitor should be implemented into being a referee?
I think it's important because if you're not willing, this is my personal opinion, I think it's important to know what it feels like to take a hard shot, what it feels like to take that hard punch, what it feels like to take a hard kick, and know that you can survive that. It's going to hurt. But you can survive it, but bottom line, your number one duty is the safety of that other fighter. So if you have to jump in between and he's in the process, the opponent is in the process of throwing a punch or a kick or a blow, sometimes you have to eat one to save the other fighter. But typically speaking, I've never taken more than one. Most people don't like to hit the referee more than once.
It's not good for business, I don't think.
No, and plus they see you again. It's like, yeah, I remember you.
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was going to say there was a local fighter here in Oregon. I was his coach for a while, and we were buddies on the side, but his name is Josh Bennett. And I swear every single fight, for probably 15 fights, he would hit me. He would find a way to hit me, whether it be after I raised his hand or as I'm raising his hand or as I'm stopping, he would find a way to hit me. And, you know, after he was done fighting, I asked him, Josh, what the heck? And he said, well, I always tried to implement that into my game plan. Thanks, Josh.
That is great stuff right there. Oh,
they're like, come
you
back
know,
in and train with me again. I owe you a few.
Right? May give you some extra, you know, work, man. You know, oh, you go one more time. Come on, one more time. Just keep piling it on them. You know, with all the, you know, the craziness going on, you know, in MMA today with injuries on some of these bigger cards, I'd like your opinion as somebody who's a coach. What do you think the problem is? Do you think these guys are overtraining?
I think that a standard problem is overtraining, but at the end of the day, this is a combat sport. There is contact to be made, and based on the training regime that starts 6 weeks out, where you do doubles until you get to the third week, and then you're doing triples. That would be three hard workouts a day, and then you're really tearing your body down. And then a week and a half out, you go back to doubles. Then 1 week out, you go back to singles. You're at the point, you are at the absolute breaking point with your body that nine out of 10 injuries, actually probably 90-95% of the injuries don't happen in the ring. They happen in training, and it's legitimate. The person who trains harder, and you must train harder, is the person who injures themselves more often, and it's part of the sport.
Well, you know, we see it all the time, you know, and I know a lot of people out there feel like these guys are overtraining, you know, and they're ruining, quote unquote, you know, the sport because they didn't make a pay-per-view or something. As a referee, when an event's canceled or a major fight on a card is canceled, what does that change for you guys? Anything at all?
Absolutely nothing. This is going on. Our number one and only priority is safety. Now, the one thing I do look at as a referee is, does the replacement fighter have the requisite skills to stand in there back and forth with this super based on their personal knowledge or previous injuries?
The boxer would have that.
I couldn't hear what he said. I was.
Yeah,
sorry, you have to cut out.
Dave's breaking up.
Okay. Oh man, this is such a great interview, man. I'm loving this stuff.
Is Dave still with us, Carl?
No, let him know, Carl. Let us know as soon as we get him back. This guy.
Yeah,
we could pick
his
brain all day.
His line dropped. I'll try to get him right now, guys.
I mean, I think this is awesome insight, you know. I mean, getting to see, like, what he thinks about the conditioning requirements that referees need, I think is something that people really fail to understand. And the fact that you have to be willing, like you said, at some point, you know, there's going to come a point in time where you have to dive in between these guys and you're going to take a shot. And knowing that you can take that shot is very important, I think.
No, I agree. I like his mentality and his mindset behind the fact that, you know, there should be certain guidelines for you to become a referee, and one of them should be having some kind of experience. Like he pointed
okay,
out
boys,
about knowing.
Dave is back.
Oh, okay.
I am
hey,
back,
Mr.
and I'm so
Hagen.
Sorry.
Oh, it's all good, Mr. Hagen. I actually have some questions concerning the national rules. Like, because you see in some states where amateurs are wearing headgear or bigger gloves and niche and the shin guards. But, like, here in the state of Oregon, our amateurs aren't required to do that. Is there some, would you like to see maybe a national board of rules that makes the amateurs in all state on the same level, or do you think that allowing each commission to develop their own rules is the best way to handle that?
You know, at the end of the day, as a referee, I'm going to look at safety. If it's been assessed and there's a safety assessment and there's qualified officials, not only ringside but in the ring, the chances of an injury are substantially reduced. So if the commission is willing to take whatever risk, then we as referees are going to do our job and maintain safety for the fighter. Personally speaking, though, Matt Hume, back in the early 2000s, possibly late 1990s, developed a pancration system up in Washington with an ABC set of rules. And that was A class, B class, and C class. And it was really an outstanding system that allowed for progressive use of armament, like closed fist in the B's, whereas C's are open hand, no knees. The B set of rules are closed fists and still no knees, and no elbows at all. And A rules are pretty much everything goes, it's full MMA. And it really allowed for people to develop themselves without getting injured. And we even took Chris Lieben up there when he was in his younger stages and did some open palm pancration to get him some kickboxing and ground experience. And what it really does is it develops fighters without a higher propensity for injury. And do I agree with that? Yeah, it really helps develop people and develops fighters. I like that. But I also see that the other side works as well.
Most definitely. And then a lot of people, they look at the sport of MMA and they have this real, like, bad taste about it in their mouth. What's one thing you would like to tell these people that is a positive about MMA that might maybe bring them onto our side of the fence?
The one thing that I consistently tell people is this. In boxing and kickboxing, there's 11 deaths a year in boxing. In kickboxing, I never had a fight where I was back in the gym for at least 3 weeks because you're banging bones, bone on bone. At the end of the day, when you get injured in boxing or kickboxing, they give you an 8 count and then say, go do it again. Then give you another 8 count, go do it again. In terms of medical, the concussive head injury that can happen from that and the coup and the double recoup is substantially greater than MMA. In MMA, I've never had a fight where I wasn't back in the gym the next day. There is almost no chance of an injury because as soon as a person is unable to defend, i.e. they would otherwise receive an 8 count, the fight's over. We're done. And it makes for less injury. You can take a person to the ground. You can play the chess game. Hey, I'm getting hit here. I'm going to go low. Hey, he's going low. I'm going to keep my distance and throw uppercuts. And whatever it happens to be, it's much, much safer. And I truly believe that MMA is the growing sport for safety.
No, I definitely agree there. I think that it's shown over the course of time, like even though MMA is still kind of in its infantile stage of growth, that it is a very safe activity for people to participate in. And I wish that people wouldn't just look at it as a violent sport, but actually as something that's ingrained into us evolution-wise to want to compete at this type of a level. And as long as there's guys like you that understand that the safety is of the utmost importance, then there's no reason that, you know, people should be against this.
No, if you look at some of the people who are involved in the upper levels of MMA, you don't get really good unless you have years and years of practice. And in fact, you have to be a little bit older to be very, very good. A lot of those guys are four-year collegiate wrestlers, four-year high school wrestlers. So now we have a person with a college degree. Then they want that additional competition. Perhaps they were in the Olympics. And then they go into an MMA format where, you know, it takes them another 3 to 4 years to become good. So now a person's in training 15, 20 years, and you don't find that in other sports. On top of that, I think that the level of intelligence versus being a thug is much greater in MMA because most people are college educated and they tend to present themselves much better.
And would you agree, Mr. Hagan, that most people that practice jiu-jitsu or other forms of the martial arts are a more humble person because they constantly are being reminded that at any moment you can be got?
I think that if you are not humble, you will be very soon because somebody will humble you. End of story. There was always somebody out there to humble you. I was Randy Couture's coach. And at the end of the day, Randy Couture got humbled. And he was a humble man to begin with. But even as a world champion, he realized any given day, it could be his day.
It's true.
Yeah, and even on a day where you get hosed by a glove cut, it cannot be your day.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned training in the early 2000s up here with some of these guys like Randy and Chris Lieben. Why is it that Oregon maybe doesn't get the recognition as being one of the premier mixed martial arts states that I feel that it should get?
At one time, it really was. Oregon was the mecca in the Northwest and really one of the meccas in the world where I walked into the Team Quest practice one night and I started counting the belts. I wrote down the names. I went home. I did some internet research and realized we had 44 world championship belts in that room that night. We had Couture, Boss Rutten, Tim Sylvia, Henderson, Evan Tanner and Bang Bang Ludwig and BJ Penn. I mean, those are some of the guys that we had in there all the same night, as well as the rest of the fighters. But as a lot of these guys have branched out and gone to Vegas, or they've gone to Colorado, or wherever they've gone to, we've lost some of that consolidated talent that we had here in Oregon. But I think most people still recognize the Pacific Northwest as a mecca for MMA. And here's I'm just going to throw this in. My personal experience is, if you are a championship amateur fighter or champion amateur fighter in Oregon or Washington, you can go anywhere in the nation to fight pro.
True. Well, most definitely. I would not argue that one bit at all. I think that's definitely spot on.
And a lot of it's just because of your training partners.
Even like the guy right now, that Terrence Williams, who just turned pro. I think he's had two pro fights now, one up in Washington and then the one he had last week in Russia. The kid is a freak. I had the pleasure of watching him fight at Rumble at the Roseland 64 against Grant Berger. And I was just kind of left sitting there like thinking, oh, my goodness, this isn't a guy I would even want to spar with. He's just vicious.
And there are so many of those guys. I mean, heck, down here in Salem, we have two world champions in jiu-jitsu. Up in Portland, they've got Armand, who's a Pan Am champion. They've got the Beast up there, Marug, who's a world champion. We've got probably 15, 20 world champions, including Fabiano Scherner up there. Just in Portland alone in jiu-jitsu, we've got Portland Muay Thai with Dan Burke, one of the premier world-class Muay Thai trainers on the planet, as well as Jeremy Weirs. I mean, where else can you get such a mecca of high-quality training partners? I don't ever see a place anywhere else in the nation that you can.
I totally agree. And before we run out of time tonight, I want to give you a quick second to run at any information you want to give out, any sponsors for your gym maybe, or you know anybody you want to thank or anything. Please take a run at it.
You know, there are a lot of people that I can thank, because at the time that I was coaching people, I was also learning. The people that I can truly thank for helping me to get where I'm at right now is Randy Couture and also Nate Corey, one of my best friends, Chael Sonnen, and those are some of the people that I've grown up in this sport with, and I've seen them progress on the fight side, and as a result of my affiliations, I became the referee and through those affiliations, and they've really helped me on my side as well. I also want to thank all the people that I've ever trained with. Without them, I could not be in a position to coach without knowing my weaknesses, and they've always pointed them out to me.
Well, you know, Dave, I can't thank you enough. Me and Lepaki, I guarantee we could spend another hour talking to you. I mean, your knowledge, your career, both in combat sports and refereeing, are just amazing. Your information, God, I mean, there's so much more I want to sit down. We're going to have you come back on again down the road if you would like to do it again.
I'd be happy to anytime. I mean, I really respect what you guys do, and you put on a great show.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hagan. We really appreciate you taking the time out today. I mean, it was really an honor to get to talk to you and hear you know, some great insight from somebody that has such a long history in the game.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it. And feel free to call anytime. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Hey, thank you so much. You have a wonderful night, and we'll talk to you again soon. I look forward to seeing you at an event very soon. So hopefully we'll run into you at an event before too long.
Well, you know, if you do, please say hi, because I'm not sure that I know the face. I just know the name. And Devin Ashford speaks highly of you. But please stop by and say hi and have a beer afterwards.
Oh,
well,
dude,
excellent.
The dream crusher, man. Are you getting him ready to kill people or what?
I wish I could take responsibility for that. That guy is an animal on his own.
Well, thank you so much. You have a wonderful night.
You too, and you gentlemen have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mr. Hagan.
Carl, pay some bills, brother.
Let's do that.
Yeah, what's Skippy said?
What's Skippy said? In your Clinch custom all-star dance, get clinch.com. Check out Razorware, Intimidation Clothing, Tank Crime, Global MMA Consulting, No Pain, Just Glory, Central Oregon Strike, Combat Sports Insurance, Vision Smoke Shop, 24 and LB, very cool sports. Triumph Systems. Big T nightclub.
Crashbound World.
Brawl Base. Getting a whole whack load of new stuff in, you know, before the end of the year. Tankcrimes.com. All right, boys, we're back.
Hey, Lepaki, real quick, for everybody who's been following Madhouse Lepaki or myself, you guys know about this Oregon Athletic Commission deal. I want to give a big shout-out to Janine Hammers. Anybody who receives a letter from the Oregon Athletic Commission suspending them for the loss issue, please send a copy of that letter to jhammer452@ymail.com. She is sitting down with a few politicians to see if we can get some of this cleared up, and they would like as much info as they can before they address, the State House or whoever they would be addressing. So big shout-out. Thank you. Okay, Lepaki, let's do this, brother.
All right, everybody. We got a super awesome guest coming up right now. Are you ready for this, Skippy?
I've so been dying for this for over 3 months.
Concord, California's own Rick Boomer Rizzer. Rick,
welcome,
are you with
Rick?
Us?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Oh, man, we're doing really good, buddy. How are you?
Oh, man, truly blessed, truly blessed. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, for everybody out there, we were going to have him about 8 weeks ago or so, roughly, you were going to be fighting at Dragon House 11. You had an injury. I would like to to talk to you about that before we get too far into your career and what's coming up and your undefeated record and all that. I was blessed to get to meet you right before all this happened with your injury. Talk to the fans. Tell them a little bit about what your injury was and what recovery was like, because you were very social savvy about your recovery.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there's just so much preparation into these fights, so much stuff behind the scenes that the fans don't see. You know, they come out and they witness a five-minute fight or a three-round five-minute fight. And you know, it's all the preparation up to the point that's more dangerous than the actual fight. You know, you have to be well-rounded in this sport. And so we're constantly training in all aspects. I tore my ACL training in jiu-jitsu preparing for the fight. Now, I mean, it's quite a serious injury when you look at professional athletes that have this type of injury, you know, some devastating to their career. Me, on the other hand, I feel like I deal very well with injury. You know, mentally, it does not cripple me. You know, I face my injuries just like I face any opponent. You know, I'm gonna stay focused. I'm gonna come in 100% mentally prepared for success. Period. Whatever it may be. And you know, coming into this, I have so much support. You know, that's one thing I want to put out there. I have the best support system around. You know, my family, my friends. All my fans, you know, the Boomer Nation, they're out there, man, you know, and it's very motivating for me. You know, I'm surrounded by great people. That helps out a lot.
Well, and that's something I did notice. You had a lot of support during your recovery, a lot of your fans, a lot of family, a lot of your sponsors. They stood by you. Now, how much of your fighter mentality of I don't quit, I don't give up, rolled over into your rehab time?
Oh, you know, 110% of it. You know, to be honest, it's just, I just feel like this is what I'm meant to do. You know, I see guys come out and they say, oh, I'm a fighter. I don't believe that I'm limited to that. I believe that this is just one more tool that I have, you know, and I just feel like with everybody behind me, it's so motivating, so much pushing me forward, that even, you know, this injury is not going to stop me. You know, I see it just like another opponent. We come out and touch gloves, it's on. So, I, you know, I tore my ACL, I'll bounce right back.
Now, how do you feel? I know that, you know, you were itching to fight a couple weeks ago and you couldn't, but do we see a title defense coming up soon?
Oh, definitely. You know, one thing about me is, you know, a little background piece of action for you guys, man. My senior year, I tore my calf. I ruptured my calf. You know, and they told me, oh, you're not going to be able to play. You'll never be the same, this and that. And I came back, and I played two games 2 weeks after that injury. I really believe that if you prepare yourself mentally, you will overcome anything physically. You know, part of the thing that I'm dealing with now is the fact that I do need to slow down. You know, I want to just run. I want to just go 110% full speed, you know. So that's something that I'm working on, you know. There's so much, like I said, this sport is so versatile that there's so much I can improve on, even with this injury, you know. Just because my knee, you know, had an injury doesn't mean that mentally I can't make progress or I can't work my boxing or somewhat, you know, of my cardio game. There's always room to improve.
Now, that's something you seem to have a ridiculous cardio. Is that something you really focused on, you know, before your pro career, or was that just something that fell in your lap, having all those deep wars as an amateur?
You know, it's just a little bit of both, I would say. I mean, I just, one thing that's always in my head is that whatever work I'm doing on my own in the dark that no one sees is going to have to be my best work, because I'm my biggest opponent. You know, I refuse to lose due to something that I was in control of. You know, my cardio, I don't need a gym for cardio. I don't need a training partner for cardio. You know,
no mitts, none of that. You know, I could go do that all on my own. And so I'm a firm believer of that. And I wake up early in the morning, and you know, I work on my cardio, you know, and throughout the training camps, I increase that. You know, I always want to be that fighter that the intensity level is constantly rising during the fight.
Rick,
so,
what kind of things do you do for your cardio? Just so some of these younger fighters can have an idea of what needs to be done in order to have a successful, strong career like you've started out with.
Well, first off, you know, it's not just the long distance running. You know, I'm a firm believer in the circuit training and interval training, and that's how I treat my cardio as well. You know, if I'm training for a 5-minute fight, 3 rounds, 15 minutes, then I want to push my cardio 30 minutes straight or more. You know, I have a training partner who's a close friend of mine, Justin Baseman, and, you know, he's given me quite a few tips here and there, and one of them was, you know, to just never let it be left to the decision due to you being tired. And so that's something that I keep in my mind during my cardio runs. You know, we have some pretty strong circuit training over at Fight Corps, kind of known for it, to be honest with you. When we do our cardio classes, you know, you expect a few guys throwing up.
I've tried to explain to guys before when I talk about cardio with them, and I explain that, you know, you need to have grappling cardio and striking cardio because there is a drastic difference in how your body gets taxed between those two. What do you guys do at Fight Corps to simulate, like, some heavy grappling? Is that what you focus on and you just try to go as long as you can there?
No. You know, our fight team is you know, the way that we prepare, you know, is every single day we're improving on two aspects, whether it's wrestling and boxing or jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai, okay? So every day we're improving our striking and our grappling. But like I said, with the cardio sessions and the interval training, our grappling is set up the same way. You know, if you're expected to have a 5-minute round, well, that's a 5-minute sprint. And it is different, though. You know, the cardio that's involved in grappling is different than striking. And that's why I feel like I do the best and I have the most success when I do them back-to-back and repetitive. You know, I build my structure, my weak structure around those classes.
I think that's a great plan.
Let me ask you, you know, as somebody who's, you know, come up and had a good amateur career now going into the pros, when you're working with these younger kids that are still in the amateur, what are some of the things that you are seeing that they lack that you've learned?
Patience. It's crazy when you think about it, but the number one thing that caused me to have any type of trouble, whether it's amateur or in the professionals, it's just the patience. You know, it is true. You do need to be able to explode, but you need to be able to time your explosions. You see guys that come out and they right touch gloves and just throw as many punches as they can, throw as many kicks as they can, and then they're gassed out looking sloppy after a minute. I believe in being patient and picking and choosing and you know, taking it more of what it is. It's a physical chess match. You know, it's not a street fight. It's not a backyard brawl. I mean, we're trained professionals, we're trained athletes, and this is what we do. And like I said, the sport is versatile, right? So you need to be a professional athlete and be versatile just like the sport.
I think that was well said. You know what? I hope a lot of amateurs are listening tonight because that's a statement they need to take to the bank.
Nice. Definitely. I mean, like I said, you know, I just have so many wonderful people around me, and there's so much knowledge around me. I'm just constantly taking it in, you know, and I believe right now I'm 25 years old. I'm young, you know, I'm a sponge, you know, so I'm just absorbing as much as I can and taking it day by day.
Now, let me ask you, you obviously want to get back. How tough is it for you, you know, knowing that you're an undefeated fighter, you're starting to get a name for yourself, especially here on the West Coast. you start to get a target on your back. How difficult is that for you? Does that bother you? Does that drive you? Does that frustrate you?
It's definitely frustrating. It definitely is frustrating. I'd be lying if I said it doesn't bother me, but I use it as motivation, you know, because like I said, I know that this is what I'm meant to do. So there's not going to be a point in time where I'm going to feel like this is too much, I can't handle it. You know, so I just use that to drive me, constantly drive me. And whatever I'm
Did we lose him?
No, I'm still here. You know what? Right now I'm working on my cardio. I'm running room to room. I have three kids here, you know, my three small children. So they're wild and rambunctious right now.
Hey, so that's
now,
cool.
Rick, does that give you a better workout than maybe putting in miles on the road?
Yeah, definitely. It keeps us in shape.
Now, having, you know, here's a good question for, you know, a lot of fans out there. Being a fighter, somebody who's, you know, living in the gym, now your kids are coming to the gym with you more and more. Do you see that as a path that's something you wouldn't mind for your own children?
You know, I wouldn't. You know, I wouldn't mind it for them, and I'll stand behind them 100% on whatever they would want to do. You know, this wasn't my first dream to achieve, you know. I was very involved in football, and I had so much support while doing that as well. You know, so it kind of just carried on.
So
but I was definitely, like I said, I would definitely stand behind them 110%. I love when my kids come to the gym. I lock them in the cage and let them go crazy. It's wonderful. You know, for me to be able, I mean, I have pictures of me on Facebook. I'm hitting the bags, and my one-year-old is sitting behind me just looking up, you know. And to me, that's just motivating right there because I'm not the type of, the people that know me know this. I'm not a fame and fortune type guy. I'm purely doing every single little thing I can to provide for my children and to make sure that I have a stable future for them.
So let me, you know, with you just mentioning your background in athletics, how much high school athletics did you have? Did you do wrestling as well as football?
You know, I didn't. I wasn't a big wrestler. You know, I was very close with the wrestling coach. I came to a practice or two, but you know, I never really got into it. At that time of my life, I was choosing a different path, if you will. You know, I was kind of living a double lifestyle. You know, student athlete by day, and then doing other bad, negative stuff, unfortunately, at night.
But how much did you learn from that time period, Rick?
I honestly feel like that was one of the pivotal points in my life. You know, I put all my eggs in one basket. You know, I truly believe that if I trained as hard as possible, I studied as much as possible, that this is what I was going to do. You know, I was going to be, you know, a football player. I was going to go to college. From that point on, who knows what would happen, you know. Unfortunately, like I said, this is part of the reason why I deal so well with injuries. I did have an injury. You know, like I said, I ruptured my calf. And at that point in time, I was too immature to really be able to mentally prepare myself to accept it and conquer it. You know, I let it cripple me at that point in time. And that's part of the reason why right now I could stand here and tell you that this ACL, it's nothing to me. It's merely another opponent that I'm going to walk right over.
Well, I have no doubt. I love your mentality. You know, talking with you and following you on Facebook, I've seen nothing but determination from you. I'm super excited to see you get in there and you know, defend your title so that, you know, people can say you're the best. Knowing that right now, you know, California is having some problems with the permission, are we going to see you having to take fights maybe in other states because you are pro? Are you going to maybe go into the Arizona or Nevada or up into Oregon? Or?
You know, at this point in time, I'm not 110% sure. You know, I'm just enjoying the ride, whatever comes my way. You know, I'm definitely eager to get back in there and get back at it, you know, and improve my record and prove and constantly prove to people that I am the best. And to be the best, you got to beat the best. So I'm just trying to earn my shot.
Well,
have you ever considered MFC as an option?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like I said, man, you know, I definitely have an open mind to everything. I wouldn't limit myself to any one organization, you know, because of my situation with my family and everything. You know, if I choose to put 110% into it, I definitely want to have the best situation possible. You know, currently, I mean, like I said, I'm waking up early in the morning. I'm doing my cardio. I'm going to work. I'm working 8 to 10 hours. I'm going to the gym. I'm coming back. I'm family man at that point in time, you know. So I definitely have to keep that in mind. But I'm definitely keeping all my options open.
Well, so I think the guest that we have after you, Rick, is a guy that has really showed that, you know, you can use the sport of MMA, man, to see the world for free, really. I mean, it takes 15 minutes of your time, I mean, not counting your camp and stuff like that, but 15 minutes of your time and you can see awesome places in the world. I mean, DJ Linderman fought all over Europe, Middle East, the Middle East, and now he's back in Vegas. But, I mean, he took some time to travel and test his skills against people everywhere, and I think that's something that, you know, you have your head on right, and you look at that as a very viable option.
Yeah, and you know what? I definitely see that as a big bonus. You know what I mean? The traveling, just the pure ride. You know, I'm one thing that my grandfather had told me, you know, when I was young, is that you know, people they'll tell you it's not where you start, it's where you finish, but it's not. It's the whole journey in between that counts, right? And you know, hearing that is something that stuck with me. So like I said, you know, going and being able to adventure and check out different spots and train with different cool people, like, I'm open to that. That's a great opportunity to have at your hand.
Now, I want to ask you, the only loss that you've experienced, Rick, was Mateus Coelho. Is that a guy that you'd like to maybe see in the cage again at some point?
Oh, man. You know what's funny, man? That loss. Ooh, that loss. Me personally, I don't know why the doctor stopped the fight with 20 seconds left and I'm on top ground and they're pounding you. And the referee is telling me, telling the guy on the bottom, defend yourself, you know. But hey, that's not my job, you know. I'm not the referee, I'm not the doctor. But, you know, like I said, I was willing to finish the fight with one arm and I felt like I was doing fairly well. But, you know,
what was behind the stoppage there, Rick?
I dislocated my elbow. You know, some people say, he broke his arm. He broke his arm, this and that. But, no, the arm bar was tight. I was defending it. He didn't have the right angle on it. If you watch the film, he wasn't squeezing his knee. So it wasn't the actual arm bar. The arm bar did loosen it up quite a bit. But in round two, I had tried to post up on that same elbow, and it gave out on me. And that's actually what dislocated it. But the rest of the fight was me punching him up. Now, don't get me wrong. The dude's a cool guy. Don't get me wrong. He's a good dude. I've rolled with him. He's a whiz on the ground, man. His ground game is ridiculous. You know, and I sparred with him. You know, and it was the same outcome. You know, I'm not talking trash. I'm talking facts. You know, so I would I mind seeing him again? If he can make 55, let's do it. You know, if it's gonna bump me up, I mean, I'm trying to make it to the big show. So whoever's next, okay, cool. Let's line them up.
So do you see any 155ers out there that you're like, I want a piece of that guy?
You know, I don't really look at it like that. I'm just trying to be the best fighter that I can be, you know. And whatever opponent may fall in front of me, it's really a variable. You know, I don't want to sound disrespectful in any way. I respect any man that or woman that trains and enters that cage prepared for war. I think that's big. It takes a lot of courage. But once you enter that cage and the cage door locks, then you're in my world. And you know, the end result doesn't matter if you're scared or not. You know, I'm prepared to win, period.
Rick, what was it like the first time you stepped in the cage and you heard the door lock?
Oh, man, it was a cakewalk, one-on-one. I mean, where I'm coming from, I'm fighting two or three or four guys at a time, so one-on-one with a referee is no problem.
you're like the guy in the
I'm ready.
I was a little nervous, of course. I trained hard and more nervous just with all my family and friends around me, and it was perfect, man. You know, it was so exciting. It was like Friday night football under the lights again, man. I had that feeling, and I was just once that cage door closed, I was ready for whatever was gonna come, wherever it was gonna end up. I was gonna be on top.
Dude, I got to tell you what, you have that mentality. You know, me and Lopaki both think that you got the right mindset. You've got a great set of skills. Before we run out of time, because I've only got a few minutes left, I want to give you some time to give some shout-outs to anybody you want. Make sure all the fans out there know how to find you on all the social media networks, you know, sponsors, whatever. Go for it. Run at it. It's your time.
Right on. Thank you so much. You know, first off, like I said, I want to thank you guys for having me on the show. I'm a big fan of the show, and I'll follow you on Facebook. Stay with me. I appreciate the support. You know, I got to thank God. With God in your corner, all things are possible, and I'm truly blessed. I want to thank all my family, friends, fans out there, Boomer Nation. Thank you so much for all your support. My sponsors, Fight Court. Fight Music, Lamar, man, that's my dude right there. Always hooking me up, I appreciate it. Recycle It, Sun City Tanning, and Martinez Chiropractic. You know, I have a couple other guys I want to shout out that don't sponsor me, but that, you know, they do play a role. And that's Dave from MMA Gold, and Riley from the 5150 crew. You know, I got to thank all my instructors down at the gym. Sway Mango, my Muay Thai instructor. Carl Sherrock, my boxing instructor. Sean Sharkey, the head instructor. Ryan Elrod, that's my dude right there. That's my MMA grappling coach. Cesar Gracie over there, Gracie Fighter, Jiu-Jitsu. And just all the MMA fans out there, if you're not a fan of Rick Boomer Rieger, give me a shot. Now, I'll make you a fan, I promise that. Find me on Facebook, Rick Boomer Rieger. Find me on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I'm not even sure what the thing is on Twitter, but... just locate me. There you go. There you go. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on every media source out there. Come find me, man. I appreciate everyone and all the support I get.
Well, hey, you know, please let us know as soon as you figure out when your actual next fight's locked down. We'd like to, you know, hopefully if we can get someone there. Otherwise, at least, you know, let everybody know when and where to find you.
Definitely.
I'll defend your strap soon.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, just like I told the young gentleman that they handed the belt to, the interim title, you know, I'm like I said, I'm a respectful person, but that's a make-believe title. To be the champ, you got to beat the champ. I had to fight for the belt, so he's going to have to fight for the belt, and he's going to have to fight me for it.
Well, you know, hey, give a big shout-out to Lamar for all the help and introducing me to you and all that stuff as well, you know. Tell him thank you.
Yeah, Lamar's a great dude. You know, for everybody that doesn't know Lamar over there at Fight Music, man, he's a good dude. You know, he was one of my first sponsors to look out for me, hook me up with some clothing when I needed, and hook me up with some gear when I needed, man. He's a good dude.
Yeah, and Fight Music, everybody, find him. You guys got to go check him out. He's got some sick shirts. We're about to roll into the next segment, but please, you know, keep in contact with us. You know, I'm going to talk to you through the social media anyway. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Hey, thank you, guys. Hey, and check out my website, www.rickrieger.net.
Will do, brother.
Right on.
Yes, man, we really appreciate you taking the time to come out and hang out with us tonight, man. It was an awesome segment, man. You really threw it down tonight, bro.
Hey, anytime, brother.
Well, yeah. Man, I mean, this night's been just kick ass, but I mean, and we've got the cherry on top right now. I mean, we've got the badass himself. DJ Linderman, welcome back to Madhouse.
Hey, how's it going? Guys? Sorry.
Oh, not too bad, man. Dude, last time we had you kicking back with us, you were getting ready to go down to Legacy and kick the crap out of some people, and you sure came out with an impressive win, and a lot has happened since then. God, I don't even know where to start. First, let's start with your World Series of Fighting. What's the deal? Did you sign with them?
Well, I've had some talks with them and the management, and we've worked out a certain agreement. I can't spill the beans on who I have coming up, But I can tell he's been to the UFC. He's a big name, and it's going to be a big fight at 205.
Man, I think it's so awesome, DJ, that you're fighting on that card in November, and I'm really looking forward to it. But I'm wanting to see you at Cage Warriors, man. Are you going to defend that strap?
No, I actually had to sign away from Cage Warriors myself to sign with World Series. So it kind of sucked. I gave up. I relinquished my title. I sent it back to him since I had defended it more than three times. So I'm looking forward now. It was a little setback. Now I don't have the world title over there, and I loved it. Cage Warriors took care of me over there. It was great. But I see my future right now in a World Series of Fighting.
Well, I'm excited to see you sign with them. They have definitely made a name real quick for themselves. You know, we talked tonight that Tyson Nam out of the Pacific Northwest is fighting there. Tyrone Spong, Devin Cole. I mean, they're picking up a lot of good fighters, and especially some fighters close to your weight classes that you like to fight in. Are you excited to see the level of talent they've brought in that you'll be able to face?
Oh, definitely. There's big fights coming up with all them guys. Devin Cole has a big fight with Andre Arlovski. These big names coming out of all these places, it's going to be a big show, and if they can keep doing this, they're going to be one of the top organizations in the world with all the talent that they are pulling in right now.
Well, and last time we talked with you, that was something that you felt like, hey, look, I need to go out there and start knocking off these big names because I want in, you know, to that show. And now these guys are on your doorstep, you know, gives you the opportunity you were looking for. So, you know, I'm excited to see. Now, are you going to permanently stay at 205, or are we going to see you go back and forth?
We got to see. This is going to be a big fight at 205, and if I could pull this fight off, I think I'll stay at 205. There won't be a need to jump over to heavyweight. Even though I'm at the ranking system it is right now, I'm higher than I ever was on the 205 list, over on the heavyweight list right now. But I see this next win propelling me further than any fight I've ever had. I can tell you this is going to be the biggest fight of my life, for sure.
I agree.
What's new down at DSC, bro? You guys got anything new and exciting going down there in the training program?
We got a couple new guys. One out of Montana. His name's Chris Smith from up there. He's a 185er, walks around. He actually pushes my ass. He walks around about 215, solid kid, about 6'3", 6'2", something like that. I'm getting him ready to turn pro. He's going to be a solid kid. You'll be seeing him here soon. Bodashel Hamilton, he's going to have a couple big fights coming up. He's 2-0 pro right now. You got Tommy Davis. We're going to be getting fights out with him or boxing. Him and Bo like that boxing. But there's big things coming up for Do Something Athletics.
Man, that's great. I got to see Bo's fight up in Tacoma when he took the 4-day notice fight, 3 or 4 weight classes over his own, and brought that win back down there to Northern California. How stoked were you and Tommy when you got the phone call that Bo won that night?
Oh man, it was a great call. We were sitting there, and when we were flying over to Texas at the time, and we seen the weigh-in photos. And we were just like, oh, shit. We were thinking, but this might be a little trouble for Bo, you know. He's got white fighting a few weight classes over his. And we got the phone call as we were on our way back home that he had won the fight and dominated, and we were getting round-by-round info. And we were super excited, man. We couldn't wait to get back to congratulate him.
Yeah, man, it was awesome because it was so funny, DJ, because the guy who was fighting – he would, like, try to throw this head kick, but I don't think he realized how short Bo was. And then fly over the top of Bo's head, and then Bo will be like, ah, time for the takedown. Boom, here we go.
He does the same exact thing to me, man. I go to try to hit him with a head kick, and he's so short, it just goes over.
Man, that's great, man. It's so awesome you guys got some cool things going on down there. How's training been going for you now that you got the fight booked for November 2nd?
It's going pretty good. Here coming up, I'm going to be heading up, I believe Monday I'm heading up to Portland, Oregon, or Vancouver, Washington, with Rick Story for a week or two.
Cool. Oh, so you'll be up? Oh, that'll be great, man. We might have to try and swing up there and say hi to you.
Yeah, it's going to be a good
He's
year.
Got a great
Pat White
facility.
Called me the other night and invited me up to come do some training with Rick as he's getting ready for Damian Maia.
Have you been to his facility yet?
Yeah. I actually trained with Rick at his facility. I lived with Rick for 3 months during my Bellator time.
That's my first gym.
What's that?
I said he's got a beautiful gym, man, for real.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. It's everything you need there.
Yeah, I like the fact that, you know, the way it's set up with the cage and the weights and the cardio and then the big gym area. I mean, it's a fantastic facility. I mean, and he's got a great group of coaches up there. Are you going to be up there for a long stint again, or are you just going up for a few days? Or
Just for a week. I was thinking maybe just a week, but I might go two. And then Devin Cole's coming back into town over here for a week, but I'll be training with him. And then he's shipping back out to ATT out there in Florida, and he'll finish his fight camp over here, and I'll finish moving up back home.
That's cool. I mean, how good does that, make you feel that, you know, your gym is being so successful that you've got world-class athletes who want to come work with you at their gym to tighten up their game? I mean, does it feel like you go in the right direction with your program?
Yeah, definitely, man. Every day the gym's getting better over there. Do some athletics, you know. You got guys come in. We're learning more. Our students are learning more. I'm just excited for how much it's grown and how much it's going to grow here in the future.
Well, how's the youth program going down there still, DJ? I know that we talked to you last time, and that was something that you really liked and enjoyed doing. How are things with the kids down there?
With the what? With the what?
With the kids' classes?
We're setting up classes. We haven't got the small kids class going yet. We got teenagers coming in, high school kids. They're still coming in. We have a 45er that's actually, he just graduated. He's going to be fighting here soon for his second fight coming up. I think he got called on 2 weeks' notice at 145. And, you know, it's down here, we're always ready. So our guys are always ready.
Yeah, that's something I wish that other gyms would pay attention to that you guys are doing there at DSC, and that's always being ready to scrap. Seems like you guys are one of the last, like, true fighter gyms out there.
Yeah, it's, you know, you got to be ready at all times. It's not a seasonal sport, and it's not trained for that fight, you know. You got to be here all year committing your time if you want to be a fighter, and a great fighter at that.
Well, you know, I know with, you now signing with the World Series of Fighting, I got to ask you, were you a little bummed that you're not going to be able to take that legacy title that you were so going after last time we had talked?
Oh, definitely, man. You know, I was hoping to get a good fight with, Derek Lewis was going to be the next opponent, or who is it, Rosholt, I think,
yep.
He fought. And
yes.
It would have been a great fight either way with either one of those guys. There's some top guys, top wrestlers at that. And I really wanted to go for that title at Legacy. They gave me a great chance out there, and I thank them for this.
Well, yeah, I know a lot of fans in Texas who I talked to were bummed when they realized that you weren't going to be able to come back down there to finish that run you were going on. And You know, so I had to ask for all them listening. You know, I personally wanted to see you do it because I believe that you would have kept it for quite some time until you decided to give it up. I believe they would have kept throwing the best at you that they could, but I just felt like that was a place that you were going to make a serious statement, but now it's moved to World Series of Fighting. So as long as you make that statement, that's all that really matters, you know. But I'm excited to see your debut and then to see who else they're going to throw at you because I really think that people are going to try to test themselves against you. And do you feel the same?
Yeah, I'm definitely interested on the 205. I've seen they've only signed a few up so far. I can't wait. Who else is going to be in the, you know, in the light heavyweight division with me to give me that challenge? You know, that you got the Gracies out there. You got all these guys that they're looking at. And I can't wait to get a challenge, you know.
DJ, when we watched that legacy event that you fought on, Dale Mitchell looked humongous compared to you. And you're not a small guy by any stretch of the imagination. How big was he inside the cage?
I don't know his exact weight. I know he had to cut weight to make weight. He weighed in at 266 flat. And he was trying to, you know, blow the air out just to get that 266. So he was cutting some weight. I'm guessing he was around probably 280, 275 the next day. That's how it's been for me when I fight at heavyweight. But I like those kind of fights. I come in there, I'm the lot faster guy against those bigger guys. They wear down a lot easier.
Well, and in that fight, you have even the strength advantage because you bellied a backside guy. Dude, I mean, I was like, whoa, holy shit, DJ's a strong son of a bitch.
Yeah, I didn't even know I did that until after the fight. Someone told me, and I was like, we got to see the replay to this. I was like,
it was awesome, bro. I mean, I was like, holy crap. I was like, he was almost laid out completely on the ground, and he just took him right up over the top. I was like, oh, my God. If I'm ever walking through dark alleys, I need to have DJ Linderman with me.
Yeah, that was a great fight, man. Coming back from being knocked out by that headbutt, man. I'm sure glad the ref didn't see none of that. So.
Yeah, dude, that headbutt had me nervous there for a second.
How dazed were you?
I woke up underneath of him on the ground. I was coming in to come up with like a corkscrew jab, and the next thing I knew, I was waking up and my knee was caught my leg was twisted underneath me, and I had to pull the underhook out and get the underhook to get back up. So it took about a second or two to get my bearings back, but it worked. If you look back on the video, you seem kind of we're in a 3-point stance head to head, and after that, and I'm shaking my leg out in the air because it kind of felt weird. It felt like it wasn't there, so.
Did you think he did that on purpose? Because I kind of thought he might have.
It looked like he tilted it down, you know. I can't say for sure, but, you know, I'm just glad the ref didn't stop the fight and the fight kept going the way it did.
Yeah, because you were definitely in controlling position that entire first round and then even till the second round when they stopped it. Would have been a real travesty to see him take that victory away from you.
Yeah, I just knew I had to grind that guy down. He was a big, tough guy. And I knew if I wore his cardio down in that first round that he was going to come out exhausted, and that's exactly what happened.
Now, DJ, a theme for all of our guests tonight, even we had Dave Hagan on, who's a referee, has been cardio. Can you maybe stress the importance of that? We want amateur and young fighters to understand just how important the cardio is.
I think 90% of what I do every day has to deal with cardio. Wearing that training mask. Anything I do, I pretty much wear that training mask these days. The cardio is my number one thing. You might see me out there, and I don't look like your typical 205er or heavyweight that's kind of, you know, muscular, all tuned up. But I have cardio for days. There's not a guy out there right now that's going to match me on cardio at heavyweight. I couldn't stress it enough.
So, you know, not, you know, obviously not knowing that you were going to get this great deal for World Series, after that win, what was your mindset? Were you like, bam, nailed it, title next? Were you like, ah, you know, start nitpicking your game? What was your mindset?
My mindset was just hoping I got through, like, get through that and wondering what was wrong with my leg through that fight, you know? Like, that was my number one thing. Like, did I just tear my ACL for this fight right here that I took, you know?
Now, let me ask you something. As a fighter who's got a great career and has had, you know, wins, losses, and everything underneath, I got to ask you, just because you're a fighter, here in Oregon today, some fighters started receiving permanent suspension letters for having four consecutive losses, one of them guy being all decision losses, including two title fights, and one fight was fight of the night. What's your opinion on something like that?
I say, you know, you got to look at the opponent and know that opponent. If you're the guy judging if he's getting suspended or not, I think if they're tough fights for a guy going five rounds or something like that, back to back, he may need a break, but nothing outrageous. But definitely, I'm in it for the safety of the fighters and stuff like that. But your top fighters out there, your pro fighters, I think amateur, it might be okay, just so you're more safe with the amateurs. But in the pro, I think they can let it go a little bit more, not four losses in a row.
I'm sorry, you might have misunderstood me. These are permanent lifetime suspensions. You're banned from fighting forever in the state of Oregon.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing, folks.
Yeah, exactly. one of the kids.
Yeah, I seen it a whole different light. I don't see that. No, definitely not anything like that. I don't think they should be banned after four losses in a row. They could be on a bad streak or had a real tough fight that they almost won by a decision. You know, definitely not. I think that was a bad call to make.
My view on it is this. If the state tells these guys that they can't fight here anymore, they're not going to stop fighting. They're going to stop fighting in sanctioned events. They're still going to, like, they might have, now you might have guys fighting in alleys, backyards, in areas that are a lot more dangerous for them to be fighting than inside the cage. And telling somebody that they can't do something is just going to immediately make them want to do it more. Whether the state of Oregon wants to commission it or not.
Yeah, especially if this was an outlet for one of, you know, for some of these guys out there. I know it's an outlet for a lot of people. And to take something like that away from them, it's just going to drive them to something negative, you know.
Now, and here's the sad thing is the kid, the amateur fighter who first brought this to my attention because he received a letter today, he actually has two wins in between those four losses here in Oregon, but those two wins were outside the state. They don't count, only what happens in the state of Oregon. Do you feel that there should be some kind of a national amateur system?
Yeah, definitely. There needs to be a system nationally, not just by each individual state making up their own thing, you know. And there needs to be something out there for – it goes across the whole board for everyone.
You know, and you've been into some deep wars, and probably even as an amateur, you had some fights out there that could have gone either way, you know, on the cards. Isn't that your time as an amateur to learn to by losing? Isn't that what that's about? I mean, I'm not a fighter, so I'm going to ask you, as a world-renowned fighter, isn't that what amateurs are about, is to learn, and losses come with that?
Yeah, definitely. That's what the whole amateur bouts are for. You're not stepping up the pro yet. You're learning every day. I even as a pro, I learn every day. So these amateurs these days, they're still learning, and there shouldn't be nobody trying to take anything away from for having just four losses in a row.
I agree. And that says a lot coming from a world-respected fighter like yourself. somebody who is loved by fans, officials, and leagues around the world. You know, I hope tonight that certain people in the commission are listening to that statement, because that's coming straight from somebody who is making this sport today what it is. So, you know, and I don't want to run out of time with you, but I want to definitely give you some time real quick to go through some shout-outs. You know the drill. Go sponsors, web, you know, web addresses, Facebook, anything you want to shout-out, go for it.
All right, I'd like to give a shout-out to my gym back home at DoSomethingAthletics.com. Hit me up on Twitter at TheProtege and TommyDSC. Hit us up either on our Facebooks or Twitter. And to the Minor Street Sports bar out there in Wairika, Dom Fight Gear Throwdown, all you guys out there, if there's anybody I forget, sorry about it, but I'll get you on the next one.
DJ, you know, we always love having you. You know, you're a fighter's fighter. You're truly a fan favorite. I mean, I'm glad that you take the time to come hang out with us, and I'm glad you take the time to talk MMA and tell us what's going on and give your opinion, you know. And I wish you'd come back on down the road, and I can't wait to see you down at World Series of Fighting just kick the shit out of some people.
All right, man. I'll hit you up, and here in a few days, you guys will see who I'm going to fight, so be looking out.
We will, man. Good luck, brother.
All right, man.
Thanks,
have a good night.
Oh,
Carl, wow, man. What a barn
show,
burner
man.
Tonight was, huh, Skip?
Fuck yes. This show was, if Matthew down there from Cage Fire Radio wants to ever listen to how a show is done, that's how it's done. That's how you light the fuse.
Well, I need in the ball sack.
You know, and if any time Matthew or London at, you know, want to come sit on our laps and let us show them how, you know, Daddy runs the board, you little boys call us up, man. Grandpa will show you something. That's how we do it, man. That show was perfect ending. Oh.
Just remember, you're the grandpa, Holmes.
I am. I'm the old folk. I made it last night out of arts and crafts time, and just in time to throw two quarters into that payphone and call them up and bitch at them.
So, we got a big weekend this weekend for MMA Madhouse and events we're going to be at. Let's give a quick rundown. I'll start on Saturday if you want to do Friday. Friday or Saturday, I'll be at Cage Sport 21, Emerald Queen Casino, Tacoma, Washington, Saturday. Doors open at 6, fights start at 7. Wear your Sunday clothes because you may be on TV.
Yes.
Caitlin Dieny will be at Fight Night Tsunami, or I can't even get the name of that event right at all.
Fight Night Tsunami, you're right.
And then our very own dream crusher, Devin Ashford, will be at FCFF Rumble at the Roseland 66. Did they find him an opponent?
They did not, because too many people are scared to face the dream crusher.
The dream killer.
Yeah, don't forget, Art of Fighting Friday night down there in Florida. Matthew be rocking out live results. And I just talked to LaFleur today, and he's going to be making his final amateur fight there. So he's going to catch up with the boys, and they're going to try to get a quick interview with him. So that's cool. What else do we got this weekend? I thought we had another event.
I think that covers, I think it was 4 or 5 events. That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's true.
We're only like 4 weeks away from Budo 9, Budo Friday.
Oh, you guys don't even understand, dude, how Budo throws it down. And for everybody listening, today, tomorrow, next week, BudoFights.com. One word, they will run their streams for free. You can watch them on a phone, a laptop, an iPad. You can watch them anywhere. You can watch them overseas. You can share it with all your buddies. If you can't get out to support this event, watch them for free online, man, because they got the most stacked cards. They're phenomenal. I mean, I'm telling everybody right now, they are stacked. The last card, there was not a bad fight. There wasn't a fight that could not have been honestly talked about as being one of the fights of the night. I mean, it was an amazing card. you know, and this card coming out.
It wasn't stacked, Skippy? It was just amazing?
Oh, it was stacked, but this card's even more stacked because Amy Caldwell, Madhouse-sponsored fighters, coming down from Washington to come fight for the vacated title. And last time, she went to a five-round war with Jana Piper and lost the decision. I tell you what, she ain't going to let that happen again. She's coming down to take that title. You guys could write that check and cash it.
Have you wrote the check for your tattoo yet?
I have no problem getting a tattoo artist to tattoo the Madhouse logo all over Jeff. It's very easy. You know, everybody out there talking this game, and I understand Julian's really good, but Julian's stepping up to a kid. Yeah, I'm telling you what, this kid, if he hadn't had the health issues he had last year, he would be so much farther ahead than the Pac Northwest leagues. I'm telling you right now, he shows up half the fighter that Jason Gutchek-Gibles was in the Crazy Horse fight shows up. He is walking away with his hand raised, and Clinch will be getting one of the coolest tattoos in the world. I'm telling you right now, if he shows up like he did for that Crazy Horse fight, it's a murder fest. He will leave him busted and broken.
Now, since the listeners already think you're a degenerate gambler, what about your other bet with Carl over the Glenna Avila and Jordan Nicole Gaza fight? How's that going on? Are you guys still holding tight to it, or did you guys decide to give it up?
No, I still got Jordan Nicole Gaza all day. I called it a couple weeks ago. I'll call it in now. She's going to win this fight. I stand by my decision. I think it's going to be super cool to see her picture on Carl's wall for a month. So,
I know I might spend a lot of time on Carl's wall if that goes down.
Dude, yeah, and I hope she wears the pink and black outfit, because with the pink and black corn braids, that's a pimp-ass outfit. She looks vicious.
I might match that little pink and black Madhouse shirt you got. You guys will be like twins.
Hey, you know, that's what I do, you know. Hey, and for everybody out there, if you follow Madhouse, you follow Skippy, you follow Lepaki, you're a fighter, a promoter, a matchmaker, a manager. We have a privatized group called Madhouse Fight Finder. Get at us. We'll get you into that group. It's strictly for finding fights, for filling fights. There's no BS. There's no crap in there. There's no spam in there. If you want to find a fight or you need a fight to be filled, you post it in there, and the collective group will help try to find you that fight or get that fight filled. So you can hit us up on that. Don't forget to follow everybody that works for us on Twitter. You can always find Carl tweeting out all the names. Madhouse, MMA Madhouse on Twitter, Lepaki on Twitter, STP Tattoo on Twitter. You know, check them out. Go check out the articles that Lepaki's been writing to cover Cage Sport that's coming up this weekend. We've got some other articles out there that, on the website, you guys should check out. Lepaki, Carl.
Yeah, there's a good Cage Sport 21 preview up. There's last week's recap from the first episode of The Ultimate Fighter Australia, The Smashes, which I'm telling you people, if you aren't watching this already, you better get caught up. Because these guys, as they call them in Australia, these palms from Britain are absolutely crazy guys.
Oh, dude, like I told you the other day, I think the fights are much better. No disrespect to any fighter on either card or on either TV show, I mean, but, oh God, dude, tough Australia, man. He's just killing it.
Carl wants to pay bills. Skippy, good show, brother. Carl wants
to pay
these
bills. Time to pay bills. Everybody check out Triumph Fitness. Big G Nightclub. Brass Sound World. Brawl Babe. Clinch Custom Mouse Cards. Razorware. Intimidation Clothing. Tank Crime, Global MMA Consulting, No Pain, Just Glory, Central Oregon Strike, Combat Sports Insurance, Vision Smoke Shop, and 24 in LV.
Okay, people, time to disperse. Party's over.